Yo!
Heyo!
Heyo! It's Ethically Ambiguous!
Welcome back. So this week we're going to talk about an in-depth article on Al Jazeera about a pilgrimage to Mecca and what entails, aka Hajj.
We're also going to talk about Ed Skrine, actor, who has things to say about whitewashing.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to update you on Qatar, and we're going to talk about an Iran versus Syria soccer game that came out in me and Shireen's favor.
Yeah. We're also going to talk a little bit about DACA, which is something that's on all of our minds, and what you should do to defend it.
Mm-hmm. And maybe Saudi Arabia government funded a 9/11 dry run. Whoa, say whoa. We'll talk about that all coming up.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born?
We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, guys. This is Shireen.
This is Anna. We're back.
Ethnically Ambiguous, episode 8. We got some great feedback from episode 7. Everyone loved Alex, including me and Anna. But I'm glad you enjoyed him.
Yeah, he's a good time.
He's a great person.
He's got a very interesting story, background. Something you would never expect such a beautiful man to have so much interesting things about
him. I agree 100%. Because I usually dismiss anyone that was on or is involved with The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, but he's the exception to the rule.
It's easy to dismiss someone like that.
Yeah.
Who's been on a reality show like that.
Yeah, but I'm glad you guys enjoyed it, because we certainly did. And we're going to have some more exciting guests on in the future, so keep listening.
Yeah, we're going to have the king of Saudi Arabia on.
Yeah.
We're going to have Bashar al-Assad on. Yeah. We will have President Trump on soon. We are working with his people to set up a time.
He's really excited to talk to us. He's really excited.
He thinks it's a huge opportunity.
Yeah. It's a good idea. But yeah, we have a lot to talk about today.
This episode should be about 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Okay.
If all goes as planned, you'll only get a 4-minute episode.
Yeah, a lot of stuff has happened. A lot of stuff happens every week, I feel like. It's hard to catch you guys up.
Yeah, I just want to preface, this is going to be a very low-energy episode for me. I'm very out of it. We're recording on a Saturday. I moved a refrigerator. People are dead.
Because of the hurricanes. Refrigerator?
Oh. Hurricane refrigerator happened in my apartment.
Well, yeah, Anna moved apartments recently, and so she's been hustling getting that.
My life is slowly falling apart. You're not even understanding. It's all falling apart.
What? No. She lives next to the beach now.
I live next to the beach. Everything is rotting.
Oh my god. You have a fridge now. That can help that with the rotting situation.
I would really recommend everyone try and live with without a fridge for a week. It's very humbling.
To our own privileges as far as
my life
first world
has been
countries.
A mess this week without a refrigerator. It's just
you've been a whole
terrible.
Week without a fridge.
Yeah, I moved in on Friday last week.
What have
week.
You been eating? Just like crackers?
I've been eating cardboard mostly. And surprisingly, you have to refrigerate cardboard. Nobody told me. So.
Oh yeah, it keeps it fresh.
I've been eating moldy cardboard.
I'm glad you got a fridge.
I honestly haven't been through emotional turmoil today with this fridge. My roommate also brought in a random couch, which really upset me.
A random couch from the street?
Random couch, but someone gave it to him, and we really didn't have room for it. And
now
I hope he listens to this podcast. Here's my fucking feelings about it. We didn't
have
room
for it. You talk to your roommate before you bring a big piece of furniture.
And he did talk to me, and I specifically asked him not to because we didn't have room for it.
Oh, that's even worse.
Guys, I'm having a terrible day. Okay. I mean, it was my fault. I was like kind of being a bitch, but whatever. This is life. This is what this podcast is about, right? For me to show up and cry during.
Yeah, it's therapy. It's therapy for both of us.
Mm.
There's a lot of stuff I want to talk to you about. I feel like it's hard for me to pick and choose what I want to talk about on this podcast because so much stuff happens every fucking week as far as like news and politics go and, just like cultural stuff and, Middle Eastern news and all that jazz. But, I want to start with maybe something a little less shitty. I saw this article about this actor, Ed, I don't even know how you pronounce his last name. It's S-K-R-E-I-N, Skren. Ed Skren.
Is it Skren?
Skrein.
Ed Skrein. Skrein.
Skrein.
No, because you pronounce the first, you pronounce, in German language, you pronounce the second letter. Second letter in the E and the I situation. So I think it's Ed Skrein.
Ed Skrein, I believe you.
If he goes by the German rule, which a lot of people don't, so.
Well, yeah. Either he's a whitewash or not. But in this case, he's not, because he was cast in the movie Hellboy, and he was originally going to be playing an Asian character, and the character in the comic books is half Japanese, and they reference that culture a lot in the books. And when he was cast as the character, he initially didn't really see the problem it caused. And then he got a lot of backlash from a lot of fans and a lot of people that are really sick of Scarlett Johansson's of the world taking Asian roles.
ScarJo, where are you, girl?
And so as Skrein, was that how you say it? As he watches, like, as he saw this wave of online protest, he later explained in a statement that he was going to step down, and he understands that taking the role would take the opportunity away from an Asian actor, and the article that I saw this on, it's on Entertainment Weekly. I'll put the link in the info. You should read it because a lot of,
it's from Ew.
It's from Ew.com. But he, in a tweet, he said, "It is clear that representing this character in a culturally accurate way holds significance for people, and to neglect that responsibility would continue a worrying tendency to obscure ethnic minority stories in the arts. It is our responsibility to make moral decisions in difficult times and to give voice to inclusivity." Clapping for that. Thank you, white man, doing the right thing.
Did his publicist write that?
Even so, he...
Also,
stood
how did
by
he
it.
Fit all that in a tweet? Because it says he tweeted that.
Probably multiple tweets, like one
characters.
Of five or something. But yeah, I am really happy with this, and a lot of industry people are hoping this will resonate with many actors who had never thought about standing up before and saying they don't want to be part of like this whitewashing game that's going on. I was thinking about that when Scarlett Johansson got cast in Ghost in the Shell, because she doesn't need more money, and everyone knows who she is already. It's not like this movie would have made or break or broken her. And so I was just frustrated why she didn't see a problem with her being cast in that role, or how anyone doesn't see a problem with being cast as another, like role that isn't that. And then like there's a line in the movie where it references her race. Like, there's a movie with Emma Stone where she, like, there's a line where she's like, "I'm half Chinese." And it's like, how do you not see a problem with that? Or half Hawaiian or something. And it's like, I feel like it's the actor's responsibility, especially if they're already successful and, like, they don't need this role, to acknowledge that this is fucked up.
Take a step back.
And it's not like this Ed Skrein person is, like, hot shit, you know? Like,
never heard of him.
Exactly. But, like, he's making the right decision, and I'm really happy about it. And I hope he gets a lot of work because of it. That's not Asian.
Yeah, he, like, goes and does a bunch of Asian roles.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
It's freezing in here.
Yeah,
is it not?
It is really cold.
They really turned the AC up in here. God, you guys. What are we, in a heat wave?
Do you want to borrow my jacket? I'm okay.
Yeah, I would love a jacket.
Yeah,
I'm wearing shorts and nothing else.
Yeah,
I'm topless.
At least I'm wearing pants.
In here.
I'm giving Anna the jacket off my own back right now. That's friendship, y'all. Here, catch it.
Can you toss it to me?
Ugh.
Oh, wow. Sorry, guys.
That way we're on the mic.
That's alive.
It's called reality.
This way.
Yeah. It's not the best jacket. The arms are mesh.
It's okay. It's something.
Yeah. It has a hood. It has a hood if you want it.
Guys, it's freezing in here. I'm about to zip the cord from my thing into my jacket because that's how cold I am.
This is real life, you guys. Unedited podcast life.
Oh, who's still listening? Nobody? Okay.
Anna, not with that attitude. But no, so I wanted to start with that. Good. Props to this guy, Ed Skrein. Sorry if we were pronouncing your name wrong, and you're welcome if we are.
And go fuck yourself.
But yeah, what else do you want to talk about? Maybe this Hajj thing that we mentioned on this document?
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm burping. Excuse me. I am a mess and a half today. Yeah, where's the Hodge thing?
It's right above there. Yeah.
It's an in-depth look. Jesus Christ.
The sacred journey of Hajj.
So if you don't know what Hajj is, it's basically the pilgrimage to Mecca.
For Muslims, it's expected that you do it at least once in a lifetime. Once in your lifetime.
Yeah, so I probably will never do it, but I don't really actively consider myself a Muslim. My mom, who is a devout Muslim, mm-hmm. has done it.
Yeah, both of my parents have done it. The vast majority of my family have all done it. I also don't consider myself, I'm a cultural Muslim. I was raised Muslim, but I don't really believe in God. But the pilgrimage is obligatory once in a lifetime for Muslims with the means to afford it, it says.
Yes, so it reenacts the actions of Prophet Muhammad in his farewell pilgrimage in 632 AD. It is the central pillar of the Islamic faith, meant to cleanse followers of sin and bring them closer to God. That is according to Al Jazeera. Now I repeat, Al Jazeera.
So you know it is accurate.
So it's like a 6-day journey, and mm-hmm. then you have to do a bunch of stuff, and you have to wear all white. I remember because my mom asked to borrow my white fanny pack.
That's adorable.
And she bought herself some white kits.
That's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
It's like modern Muslim women like, oh no, better get my all white gear for Hajj.
That's hilarious. Oh my God, I love that so much.
You sleep in tents.
Every year, almost 2 million Muslims take part in Hajj, which is a lot of fucking people in one place.
Yeah, and then they just like kind of walk in circles for days.
Yeah,
like,
so the Kaaba or the Kaaba, if you're pronouncing it with the English lettering or whatever, it means it's the house of God in Arabic, and you're supposed to walk around it because it's housing a very important stone for Muslims, and you're supposed to touch the Kaaba and walk around it as part of the ritual. But this article from Al Jazeera, I would definitely take a look if you guys want to learn more, because it breaks down like where all these Muslims are coming from. Like the top country that they come from is Indonesia, which is expected because apparently it's the most populous Muslim country that's not in the Middle East. So it makes sense that they would pilgrim to Saudi Arabia for this reason.
Yeah, so there's 12 steps to Hajj.
Tawaf, if I'm not mistaken, is this cleansing ritual. So you do that, you wash yourself before you pray every day, 5 times a day. And so these 12 steps are basically what Muhammad went through when he visited the Kaaba, or he visited Mecca. And Mecca and Medina are both really important cities for Muslims. And, I said this in another episode, but it's so unfortunate that, they're cities in Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia, right, as we discussed in the previous episode, is not letting a lot of Muslims come into, Mecca to pilgrimage for Hajj, because, they have a situation with Qatar right now, and it's bullshit. But Muhammad, these actions were done by him in his farewell pilgrimage in 632 AD. And, it's the central pillar of the Islamic faith, and it's meant to cleanse Muslims and bring them closer to God. So, I mean, it sounds kind of like hocus pocusy, I guess, if you're unfamiliar with it. But it's very, very important for Muslims, and, I think everyone should just learn a little bit more about why the Kaaba and why Mecca is such an important place. Because, I mean, when Muslims pray 5 times a day, they're facing the Kaaba. Like, it's not just a certain direction, like where the sun is or something. They're facing the direction of the Kaaba. So if you're in fucking, like, I don't know, if you're in Syria, you would face southeast, I believe, southwest or something. And if you're in America, you would face south, whatever. Like, wherever you are in the world, your direction of prayer is where the Kaaba is. So that's how important this place is to Muslims. Just FYI.
Yeah, wow. It's a lot. I don't fully understand it.
Yeah, I mean, I went to Arabic school and Islamic school for a lot of my life, so it was kind of ingrained into me. Also, my family is really into it. So, well, of course they're into it. They're Muslims. they're just so into it, so trendy. But yeah, that'll be, the link will be in the show description, in the, on the Feral Audio website. So check it out.
Yeah, I know you're all dying to know. Sorry, I'm just yawning through this. You're all dying to know how Hodge works. So get up on that website.
Yas. It's just an interesting thing to learn about. It's good to know your stuff. The next time someone like tries to quiz you on something, you can be like, well, I know this. I don't know.
Yes.
Good for trivia night. I also
good for trivia night. They're gonna be like, "All right, we're gonna go through what do you have to do for a Mecca pilgrimage? Yeah. Can someone name the 12 steps to Hajj?" And everyone's like, "Oh no!"
And then our one listener will come up and be like, "I know."
Yeah. And you will look like you're an absolute crazy person, and somehow you will end up on a watch list, so be careful.
Actually, yeah, very good point. Be careful out there. Yeah.
Do you think this podcast is on a watch list?
100%, yeah.
That's so interesting.
I'm from Syria, you're from Iran, dude. We're like, both of those countries hate their people. Well, I don't know. For Syria, they do. So they watch their people very closely.
Well, okay, whatever. There's nothing else we can do. Just gotta keep going.
Yeah, especially when there's this thing called DACA that is being threatened. Let's talk about that a little bit.
So depressing. Yeah. So Donald Trump doesn't understand anything, and he just basically does what he's told, mm-hmm. even though currently he's making deals with Democrats, so he really doesn't know what he's doing. Like, he's signing stuff. He basically raise the debt ceiling for 3 months because Nancy Pelosi and fucking Chuck Schumer somehow convinced him to do it. And he, like, from what I understand, he was in a room with them and he was literally, like, apprenticing them. Like, he was listening and then he just goes, deal.
What the
fuck? Because he's an insane person.
Because he still thinks he's on a fucking apprenticeship.
Steve Mnuchin was trying to be like, no, remember we agreed on an 18-month debt ceiling. And so, if you don't know what a debt ceiling is, it's basically how much money the government is allowed to spend before, like, basically borrow and spend before they get capped out. So, because of DACA and, like, the hurricane, they want to raise the debt ceiling because FEMA's going to basically, like, lose all their money because not a great time for FEMA in hurricane season.
Yeah.
So, they're raising the debt ceiling. So, in 3 months, they have to come back and revisit it. So, basically, the idea is 3 months, they can come back and try and, like, get DACA back in the game. So, it's all part of this, like, Democratic thing where they have to... It's like a game that they're playing. And they're starting
Trump
to realize, like, they have to play the game in order to make things happen. They're starting to realize that Trump only cares about his own image, so.
Yeah. And how many times he can say the word deal.
Yeah, and honestly, like, he's going rogue. He's not with the Republicans, he's not with the Democrats, he's really kinda...
I don't think it's a conscious decision. I think it's just him being absolutely insane.
No, he's insane, and I think it really just depends on what you say to him at what hour of the day.
Yeah.
And that is how you get Trump to do what you want. And
exactly.
Apparently Nancy Pelosi was like, you know, it'd be a great way for you to reassure all these people is if you tweeted something out. And then he, like, tweeted out, like, hey, dreamers, don't worry about a thing. Like, literally, like, I heard in the actual, in the room, they were like, oh, well, we don't want people to be, like, deported. And Trump goes, like, wait, is that happening? And they're like, no.
Oh my
but,
God.
Like, you should just reassure people that it's not because he's so fucking stupid.
Yeah.
He's so stupid. He's like, wait, people being deported? Like, he has no idea. It's like, no, dude, that's your job. Like, you should know what's going on.
There's literally an article with the headline, where it's from. Oh, shit. Sorry, I just hit my mic. It's from...
DACA site.
Yeah,
like.
It's
United
it says,
We Dream.
It says some
the dreamer
Trump
site.
Doesn't know what DACA is, and the White House is worried he'll find out. That's absurd. Our president is stupid. But, DACA is basically,
it's the Dreamers Act. It's basically children who deferred action for childhood arrivals is actually what DACA stands for. And it's like protections for deportation to over 17,000 young people.
Mm-hmm.
More than 17,000. That's just in the Washington state alone. But it basically defends all these kids' rights to not get deported because their parents brought them into this country.
Yeah.
So you can't really send these kids back to countries that they're not familiar with.
Yeah,
they grew up in America.
This
it's
is
just
their home.
They don't have the correct paperwork.
Something really fucking bothered me the other day at work. This white girl was talking to our supervisor, who's Korean, and she was talking about how her Korean parents still have green cards, and they are trying to get citizenship because they want Medi-Cal. And the girl was like, wait, so why would they benefit from being citizens? Like, she didn't understand that, like, just because she's born here, she's a citizen, that idea escaped her that there were benefits to being a citizen. Like, I don't know, maybe not getting deported.
like not being attacked by a fucking, off his fucking chains, border agent or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, it's absurd.
Not being detained at an airport because you don't have the correct.
Yeah, and a lot of these kids, I mean, a lot of them are children, and a lot of them are, like, pursuing their education, and they have jobs here, and everyone that comes to America illegally, they're trying to improve their lives. Like, why do we have to punish these people that are just trying to live better? I mean, obviously you have the people that are, like, in it for the wrong reasons or whatever. Like, there are exceptions to every statement that is said, but for the most part, these people are just trying to achieve whatever this idea of the American dream is. And if the Trump administration does take away DACA, it's going to have a devastating effect on over 800,000 young adults across the U.S. who are in schools and have careers, and all their families will be affected, obviously. And it's just really shitty that this is even a question in our minds, that, like, in the time where everything else is falling apart, like, why would you take away people that want to be here, that are helping the economy, that are helping the state of the country, you know what I mean? Like, these people, some of them are in the military or whatever. It's just like, that's not what the priority should be. It's like they're distracting us. Honestly, this is what's happening. The Trump administration is distracting us with all this fucking bullshit because fucking Betsy DeVos is destroying education in America.
She's also been meeting with, like, men's rights activist group and trying to lessen the like, crime, I don't know, charge for sexual assault.
What the fuck?
Yeah, that's actually happening right now.
What the actual fuck?
I'm just saying. Shit's going out there.
Betsy DeVos needs to be put in a fucking jail. Oh my god, I hate that cunt so much. She is ruining education. She's, like, it's all about money, and it's all about fucking, like, benefiting from this system. And, like, Trump only hired people that are millionaires and are benefiting from the system. And, if we don't have a decent, I mean, the education in this country already is not the best, like, as far as public school goes. So, it makes me sad because we have to invest in our children and their education. And if that's going to hell, I can talk about this forever.
So we won't, because it's sad as fuck. But here's some things you can do to help support DACA. You can call the White House at 202-456-1111. Calls are accepted between 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern. The White House email address, which is,
it's in this email right here, or this website.
You basically have to go
to whitehouse.gov/contact.
Yes, and you can send an email to the White House. Feel free to use some F words. You can also tweet at Real Donald Trump and your senators and representatives. Look up their information. Talk about protect DACA.
We'll put all this information in the
hashtag defend DACA, hashtag here to stay.
And you can call them, and then there's a sample script out in this article about what you can say to them, just basically being like, I am calling in support of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, and I strongly oppose any attempt to terminate it, yada, yada, yada. So if you have the time, everyone has a minute of their time a day. If you are passionate as passionate as we are, I mean, I hope you are, please consider taking steps to save this program that affect millions of people, and I'm sure people that you know as well, if not yourself. I don't know, people out there, what your stories are. So yeah, all the info will be in the description. Please visit the Feral Audio Ethnically Ambiguous page to see all of that.
Yes.
Yeah, but to learn more, visit wearehere2stay.org. Cause that is, one of the official DACA websites. It's just, we need to fucking stand in solidarity with the immigrant youth and our immigrant friends. And, they shouldn't be punished for, something that shouldn't, it's not punishable. It's not a bad thing they're doing or have done. their parents were trying to live their best lives and give them the best life. And that should be rewarded, if anything else.
Yep. So let's move on to the Qatar crisis again. So what the fuck is going on in Qatar? Here are some updates. Saudi Arabia has suspended plans to hold Qatar talks. So they were supposed to have a talk with the Qatari emir and the Saudi crown prince. They had a phone conversation and they were going to hold talks, but the, what's his name? Qatari emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani and Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, they are not going to do like an official meeting, or they suspended the meeting. We don't know what's going to happen. So they had a phone conversation and, nothing happened because that's how shit goes down. And, of course, Mr. Trump,
he
offered to mediate, which is straight up like, fool, you are so stupid. Why are you trying to offer to mediate? So he offered
doesn't
to
know what mediate means.
Yeah. So he's like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever read. So he said, we will be most successful against terrorism with the United Gulf Cooperation Council, which is the GCC. And then he said, I think it's something that's going to get solved fairly easily, which is so fucking stupid.
Like, what does that even mean? Like, how is this a problem to be easily solved, you fucking jackass? God, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you're just saying words.
Right. And that failed. So there's a great episode. What am I talking about? A great episode. Holy
great
shit.
Great episode of The World's Going to Hell.
I'm sorry. I meant to say a great article on The Hill, which I don't know if they're conservative or not. I can't decide what's up with The Hill website. Anyway, it failed. Sorry. Sometimes I just like, I feel so overwhelmed with the information I'm putting out to you guys that even I just like, I look down at the ground and I think, should I just lay down and take a nap?
I feel like I've seen you do that multiple times.
I'm so tired all the time, guys. Anyway, this information is not making me more awake. So they had a phone conversation, the Qatar King Sheikh and the Crown Prince King of Saudi Arabia. Sorry, I can't say all their names. I just can't say all their names
Tamim
again.
Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani and Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
So like hours after they had a conversation, they started attacking each other again media. And Michael Stevens of the Royal United Services Institute told the New York Times, the problem is as much about appearing to not capitulate to the other side as it is trying to solve any problems. Given the hypersensitivity of both sides appearing weak, it makes the problem considerably harder to solve. So guess what, Trump? It ain't gonna be easy to solve because these are like literally
two
bros being like, no dude, like, yeah. I'm tougher than you.
Yeah.
And so it's never gonna solve anything. And Trump was like, hey, maybe I'll mediate. And everyone like looked at Trump like,
yeah,
so
that's been done
on Friday, September 8th, I apologize, I know nothing. Trump called the two leaders separately, urging them to work together to end terrorism and blah, blah, blah.
What?
And nothing happened. Like, he was just like,
yeah, because a phone call is all we needed.
Guys, come on. He's probably like, guys, come on. Let's all relax, man.
Yeah, I'll put a Trump Tower in the country. Come on.
Don't you want, like, indoor skiing range or something? And they were like, fuck you. So.
Yeah, because all we needed to stop terrorism was a call from Donald fucking Trump. Yeah, what were we thinking this whole time? God.
So, that didn't happen. Nothing happened. They were just like, meh. 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 Meh.
Yeah, that's not surprising at all.
They just, after that happened, they just released two conflicting statements again, the two different countries. So, is everyone as tired as I am?
Well, this is interesting. I wanted to bring up this a little quickly. Our sound engineer, Matt, he sent us this email a couple days ago, and the subject was, White Guy Discovers Middle East News. You're welcome very much. Because of me and Anna, Matt is, getting educated about the Middle East, so I can only imagine where it's gonna go.
Get the vibe that Matt is obsessed with us?
Oh my god. He does have to listen to us every week for hours. Just editing our voices. I'm surprised he's still around. Iran and Syria, he sent this article that, cause I was totally out of the loop, and they played in the World Cup. Iran and Syria both played in the World Cup in a qualifying match on Tuesday the 5th, and it ended in a tie! And it ended because, as far as Matt, this is his words that I've taken as our own, Anna and I are both equals, and international soccer holds less power than our friendship. Or does it?
Part of me thinks, like, Matt has a secret crack habit.
What? He's going to listen to this.
Matt, you heard me. you heard me damn clear. Get off that crack, dude.
I think you're okay, Matt. Stay sober.
Stay sober. So you also agree that Matt has a crack habit? Because that's basically what you just admitted when you told him to stay sober.
I will not agree or disagree.
That's so interesting.
But yeah, shout out to Matt, because, I like that you're thinking of us when you read some news, especially about Iran and Syria. So yeah, good job, Iran and Syria, for playing in the World Cup despite of everything else going to shit. At least there's some people.
Yeah, I don't think they have a choice.
Yeah. Oh. What?
I really have to play the World Cup. I mean, Middle East only has one thing, and it's soccer.
Yeah, Arabs are obsessed with soccer. Actually, Syria reached the World Cup playoff with Australia after the game with Iran. So that's exciting because Syria, I think, needs this a lot. I'd like to talk a little about Syria, actually.
Real quick, it is like -2 degrees in here.
I know, dude. I know. It's okay. We're doing good. We're doing good.
If anyone hears this, send help. they're freezing us out, you guys. Damn, dude. Shit is cold as shit.
Yeah, it's cold as my heart. I want to talk about Syria. A couple of things about Syria. The main thing I want to talk about is something that my best friend in the world, I've known her since I was in third grade, my oldest friend, her name is Amanda, and she let me know about this photographer, like a photojournalist. Her name is Lindsay Addario, and Lindsay Addario is, hold on, oh god damn it, I just clicked out of it. She is doing this project with Time Magazine, and it's called Finding Home. They've been doing it since December of last year, and basically, oh my god, why is the internet being a little bitch? So the info will be in the description, so you can look it up, and I would strongly advise you do, especially after, if you guys listened to the episode where I talked about the Ben Taub article about how there was torture going on in Syria, and it was being not broadcast very well, and yada yada. It's kind of going along that same thread, because she's been taking photos for the past, I think, almost 2 years, regarding Syria, and so this multimedia project called Finding Home, they're partnering with Lindsay, and Time Magazine's partnering with Lindsay, and basically it's documenting the lives of four babies that have escaped, that were born to refugees that are now in Greece. So Syrian refugees that are now in Greece. There are four babies. They're called Rahaf, Helene, Hamida, and Faraj. And, this is documenting their, how these four babies that are born to displaced Syrian refugees who are living in the northern Greek camps, and basically them trying to find home, because there's a lot of refugees out there. They're navigating a very uncertain future while searching for a place to call their own, because everything they've known is obliterated. And, these photos are so powerful, and there's a really amazing article here that I'm looking at. So this article's written, she says, the person that's writing this is the director of photography at Time. And she says, I look at powerful but difficult work every day, and it often strikes me that sometimes even the most devastating pictures are not enough to bring attention to a global crisis. That's why this time we are approaching the story in a new way. She says, I have worked with the photographer Lindsay Addario for more than 15 years. I knew her pictures before I knew the woman behind the camera. She's a fierce journalist with a fiery passion to tell the truth about the great injustices of the world. She's a brave war photographer, and she's received accolades for her frontline reporting, and she has documented the lives of some of the most voiceless women in the world. So this woman, Addario, she's a fucking boss, and seriously, can I be you? Like, she's amazing, and her work is making a difference, and I'm really happy that Time is recognizing that pictures sometimes aren't enough to make people act. And so that's why it's kind of a multimedia project now, because they're also partnering with a video producer and an international correspondent, as well as Lindsay Addario with her photographs, to bring attention to the story of these four babies that are so adorable. And I mean, it doesn't matter if they're adorable or not, but I think looking at photos of these a picture of innocence, of human innocence, is a baby. And there's a photo where this 5-day-old newborn is being handed from a person from raft to raft. Another one where a week old baby is wrapped to, like, really tight to his mother as she walks for literally miles along a train track in Hungary. Like, these are people simply trying to survive, and, the fact that we're at this day and age where we're able to document it in different ways, I think it's really important that we are able to not only document it, but spread the word out there. Like, I didn't even know about this until my friend told me about it, and it's been going on for a while, so that's on me. But the fact that I can look at it now and also spread the word about it is the least I could do. And I am so thankful for photojournalists like Lindsay Addario, because she's doing good work, and she's using her photography for a good purpose. She's not exploiting the crisis. She's drawing attention to it. And, her work, even aside from this project, is so phenomenal. I looked on her website, and there are so many brutally beautiful photos that just really, I don't know. A lot of it's about the war. A lot of it's in the Middle East and Afghanistan and Africa and Iraq and Pakistan. And, a lot of it's about the women at war as well. So if you have any interest in all of this, please check her out. Her name is Lindsay Addario. You can look at her website, lindsayaddario.com. All the info about this, again, in the description and in the Feral Audio website. But you can even go to Instagram. So Lindsay Addario has an Instagram, as well as the Finding Home project, just at Finding Home or at Lindsay Addario. So she posts these photos that she takes, and from, again, about the article, what I was talking about with the torture and everything a couple of weeks ago. There's a photo here that I'm looking at, and there's a man showing us his back with a giant hole, like a hole-shaped scar in the middle of his back. And it's a quote, and he says, they used to hang us on a fence by our wrists and whip us with either rubber hoses or electric cables. Usually they would beat me on my shoulders, but they hit me on that day 50 to 60 times on my back with a rubber hose or an electric cable until the wound was open. They would curse as they did it. You would be silent the whole time. They would beat you. Once you made any sound, they would restart from the beginning. I can't explain enough what's happening inside the prisons of Assad. There are ways of torturing people that I have never heard of before. So, like I said in that previous episode, the worst crimes against humanity are happening right now in Syria. And Bashar al-Assad is, I don't want to say the new Hitler, but, like, he's even worse than Hitler, in my opinion, because it's kind of, he's not getting the hate he deserves. At least Hitler is, like, a known bad guy. Bashar al-Assad is doing what Hitler was doing and worse to his own people. And we have the means to document it now, and spread the word about what he's doing, and it's still not getting the attention it deserves, because what is happening in Syria is horrific and disgusting. So I would encourage everyone that's listening to this to, like, just raise awareness and spread the word and be active in your communities and just be aware of what's going on. Because the next time someone asks me, like, what's going on in Syria, like, I don't know if I can hold it together any longer. But yeah, it's, check out the Instagram. All those pictures are so powerful. So it's at Finding Home and at Lindsay Addario. She is just a fucking badass, and, thank you so much. I have nothing but thanks and admiration for this woman. And that's what I want to say about that. I can talk more about it, obviously, but, I encourage you guys all to look at it and read about it and, support the Finding Home stories and look at them, because these babies, just like a lot of babies of refugees and a lot of refugees, are just trying to find a home. And they have no idea what's been going on, and they need our help, and so does everyone else in Syria. Like, it's... I could talk about this forever. I'll stop. Sorry. It's been... This is my soapbox. Welcome to Shireen's soapbox. Yeah. I will stop now. Please look it up yourself and read about it. I encourage you to do that. These photos are amazing. Sorry, Anna, for that soapbox moment.
I honestly just took a nap.
Oh,
sorry.
Wow.
No, you should do it as Shireen says, but I am like half asleep and I apologize. I can't check in right now.
No, you're good. You gave me my soapbox moment for sure.
I want to talk about something. So like I've always said before, my day job is another podcast. I'm so tired of podcasts, you guys. I'm so tired of podcasting.
Yes, don't say that.
But Allison Zeidman, one of our writers, researchers for this other podcast I work with, sent me something really interesting about ISIS and the Syrian civil war and climate change. And she wrote, study found evidence that climate change led to an extreme drought in Syria's breadbasket between...
Sorry, that's my fault.
Sorry, I'm like burping. Excuse me. Drought in Syria's breadbasket between 2006 to 2009. Food prices skyrocketed. Nutrition-related diseases became widespread. And 1.5 million internal refugees abandoned their farms and flooded into Syrian cities already crowded with 1.5 million Iraqi refugees displaced by the Iraq war. According to the study, this influx of people exacerbated existing problems like unemployment, corruption, and brewing discontent with the regime of Bashar al-Assad, which failed to respond to the situation, according to the study. 2011, the unrest reached a boiling point and erupted into the Syrian uprising. So, isn't that crazy? Climate control ruined the Middle East as well. Crazy.
Wow. Climate control. So, climate control not only made LA a fucking oven these past 2 weeks, it's also ruining the world. Yes. And we still have to defend that it's a real thing. Isn't that absurd? Like, climate change is still something that's debatable in fucking Republican and dumb circles.
Yeah, and I found something by accident the other day on HuffPost that Rush Limbaugh was, like, denying that he was saying Hurricane Irma was a conspiracy, but he was evacuating anyway. Like, he was just being like, it's a liberal Democrat conspiracy to make money off stores being sold out of things. And it's just like,
and then he secretly evacuated. Like, yeah. And then he didn't even, the fact that he said that and then secretly evacuated.
He didn't even
like,
secretly evacuate. He wrote on, he said on his radio show podcast, I don't even know what, I think it's a radio show.
Oh, shit.
That he was like, yeah, due to forces I can't control, I unfortunately can't record here next week.
Forces so I can't control? You mean fucking climate change?
Yeah. So he got out, too, because he lives in Florida. So he's an idiot, and he's insane. Rush Limbaugh is truly insane.
Oh my God. You sent me that tweet, and I sent it to my whole family. It's
that's so funny.
Stupid.
It's so funny. I just read this headline out of the corner of my eye. I just saw it. It was like, Rush Limbaugh claims Hurricane Irma is a conspiracy. Evacuates anyway. It's just like, are you fucking kidding
that's
me?
That's the world.
Yeah. You're so stupid. So anyway, Hurricane Irma is not a conspiracy.
Not cool.
It's definitely like currently in the next few hours going to absolutely destroy Florida.
Like, if you thought Harvey was bad, like, I am hoping Texas is recovering right now and Houston is building itself back up, but fucking Irma, she's coming in with a agenda.
And I'm supposed to fly to Atlanta on Monday. My flight might get canceled. We'll see how it goes, because Georgia's going to get some...
You told me you were doing that. Where are you going?
Jesus Christ, this is not a personal enough podcast for me to tell people where I'm going.
I thought it was like a business thing. Like,
it is. I'm going to Atlanta for work. We'll see if it happens.
Okay, sorry.
Look, I didn't buy them tickets.
That's some work money. Sometimes I forget that I'm being recorded, to be honest. I think I'm just talking to my friend Anna.
Yeah, you guys with asking so many personal questions.
With headphones on and, yeah.
In a studio.
We're just having a little chat in a studio.
Yeah, but I read that when you posted it on... Me and Anna always have a document that we look at for each episode that we, like, compile our links on. And so when Anna posted this thing about the Syrian civil war or the Syrian crisis and the climate change, I was like... The fuck? Like, I had no idea that, like, because of climate change, there was an extreme drought. I mean, I knew there was a drought, but I didn't know. I mean, it makes sense now that I think about it that it was due to climate change. But of course that would affect the fucking crisis and the millions of people in Syria that, like, don't have food and water. And, like, it made it even worse because Bashar al-Assad at times stopped the electricity and water from coming to certain cities. So, yeah, climate change is so real. It's disgusting.
Also, really interesting New York Post article that came out, today that says Saudi government allegedly funded a dry run for 9/11. Oh my God. I don't know if this is real. I don't know what's up because it's New York Post and you know the Post, how they can be. But apparently there's a lawsuit, against the Saudi Arabian government and it reveals its embassy in Washington may have funded a dry run for hijackings carried out by two Saudi employees. So basically they took a flight from Phoenix to Washington and they're living undercover in the U.S. as students. And they're these two, like, Saudi Arabian embassy nationals who are living undercover. And so they take this flight. And during the flight, they're, like, asking the flight attendants all these crazy questions.
What?
Like, where's the bathroom? How does this work? How does that work? And, like, the flight attendants are getting really suspicious and weirded out. And so they would be like, where's the bathroom? And they'd be like, at the back of the plane. And they would go to the front of the plane and on two occasions tried to get into the cockpit.
What the fuck?
And the pilots were so freaked out that they had, like, they landed the plane in, Ohio, like an emergency landing. And the two got arrested, but like the FBI questioned them and they couldn't figure anything out. So they chose not to like pursue it. But
Damn.
They were trained in camps in Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda camps.
Oh my God.
It's all this shit. They were like trained to be hijackers and then they lived in Arizona forever. And then we like regularly contact, Saudi
shit.
And like Al-Qaeda leaders and who are now currently, incarcerated in Guantanamo Bay.
Both of these people?
I don't know where these people are.
Oh, sorry.
Potentially are. And they were receiving money from the Saudi government and it was all this stuff and, they were both like longtime employees of the Saudi government. It was just all this stuff. And it was,
Yeah. The lead attorney for 9/11 plaintiffs, he's saying that.
It was in November 1999.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. The lead attorney for the 9/11 plaintiffs, he's Sean Carter. He says, we've long asserted that there were longstanding and close relationships between Al-Qaeda and the religious components of the Saudi government. This is further evidence of that. Damn.
Yeah.
And 9/11, the anniversary,
it's Monday.
It feels weird calling it an anniversary because it almost sounds like it's a
hashtag never forget.
Yeah, never forget. That's on 2 days from now because we're recording this on Saturday, but, yeah.
And the Saudi embassy paid for those plane tickets for the dry run.
What? This sounds legit. Is that weird that I think so? I don't know.
No, it definitely sounds legit, but like it's also the New York Post, so you just never know.
Yeah, it's true.
But it sounds like crazy because this is like an actual court case. They're trying to sue the government. So
fuck.
They tried to reach out to the Saudi government.
Why is
for,
it taking
like,
us
comment,
so long
and they
to
were
like
know
about
no,
no.
Because everything is like sealed and weird shit is always happening.
That is insane. I mean, it makes sense, I guess, that...
Yeah, apparently all this stuff is based on nearly 5,000 pages of evidence submitted of record and incorporated by reference into the complaint in the suing of this government.
Fuck, dude.
And it's like, they include every FBI report that we have been able to obtain through hundreds of thousands of pages of government documents related to Saudi terror funding remain secret.
Holy shit.
I read that sentence kind of weird, but... Yeah, apparently it's got, like, the Saudi government's fingerprints all over it. So, what do you know? Still not banned. What do you know? Still not banned. Don't worry. They will never be banned. Because we live in a fucked up world. Fun times, right? Is everyone having fun?
Oh, my God.
We're all having fun here, right? That's so cold. I'm sorry. I'm just going crazy.
No, you're good, dude. I know.
So, I think We should end it here.
No, wait, I want to one more thing. Let's end on a positive thing. I want to shout out...
No positivity, Shireen! None!
I want to shout out Ehlan Omar. She is the first Somali-American Muslim person to become a legislator. Time Magazine...
Where? In America?
Yeah. Time Magazine... has a first, not project. Like, they have a first project, I guess, like an article project where they're listing the first women to accomplish whatever they're accomplishing. And so, I look at this, article about Ehlan Omar and Omar, and she is the first Somali American Muslim woman, and she's a legislator now, and I want to read this article, but there's an ad playing, and I will talk about it. Oh, wait, it's right here. Read interview. So, she wrote, there's an interview, and it's basically written as though she's writing a article herself. It's, written in the first person, and she's saying, that her life in Somalia before the Civil War was beautiful. She was 8 years old, and she was understanding the world in a different way. They fled to Kenya, and they lived in a refugee camp for 4 years, and then they arrived in the U.S. when she was 12. And they talk about her life growing up, and she was always called the why kid in her family, because she always needed to know why something was happening, why I had to do something, why, whatever. And she talks about how she's still that way, and she constantly questions herself. And this article is just really good, and I really recommend it. But it's just, again, if we're going to talk about the immigrants of this country and what they've achieved, she's one of those examples where someone... who was not born in this country came here and has achieved greatness. Cause the immigrants in this country, in my opinion, are the most motivated to achieve something because they want to prove something to not only themselves, but their families, and kind of against the stereotype that they are here for the wrong reasons. Yeah, it's, she says in this article that Somalia is a majority black Muslim country, and so is the camp in Kenya that they were at. If you're growing up in an environment where your faith and your race are not topics of conversation, it's really hard to come to an environment where all of that means something. Being black in the U.S. means something. There's a history. Being an immigrant, a refugee, a Muslim, all of those things represent an otherness that is not typically or easily confined into the social fabric of this country. As someone who grew up never really having to feel less than, it's a hard reality to wake up when you're 12. I had to figure out what it meant to be a bridge builder, what it meant to forge relationships that never really existed, becomes the backstory to how I ended up where I am. So yeah, that alone should sell you on this woman. She's fucking phenomenal. So props to her. You're fucking dope. You're dope. Ehlan Omar. Yeah, check it out. Time, you're doing some good work out there.
Should we shout out some Instagrammer tweeties?
Yeah.
So at Lex Curtin wrote, Ethnically Ambiguous makes Mondays suck less. Thank you so much for being hilarious and educational at the same time. Thank you so much. I hope you completely enjoy this episode where we're freezing to death.
She also says, thank you for talking about Syria. First, learned about the conflict in college, and it always strikes me how little it's talked about. I agree, Lexi. We are all in agreement with you.
And S_Cook1011 on Instagram.
Yeah, Sid Cook.
Sid Cook wrote, hey guys, just listened to episode 7 and want to tell you both I love you and I am white. Emoji, crying, laughing. That's all. Ha ha. You are brilliant and I love listening to your podcast. Thank you so much.
You're brilliant because you have good taste.
This is an episode that you will probably not love because I am freezing to death.
No, seriously, for whatever reason, when someone is like, I love your podcast and I'm white, I feel so validated because I feel like I make fun of white people a lot, but not like in a bad way. I just feel like I don't know. It's me trying to punch up, you know, yeah. But thank you, Sid. And thank you, Lexi. Y'all are the reason why we do what we do. And to be honest, me and Anna both had really busy weeks and we debated not even recording this week, and I am really glad we did because people like our listeners are the reasons why I do it, and I think it's really important that we're doing.
Yeah. I don't smoke cigarettes, but I need a cigarette.
Yeah, so maybe we should end now so we can go chain smoke some cigarettes.
Yeah, I mean, what else is there in life?
Next week, if I ever get to it, I'm going to talk about what it's like to live under President al-Sisi of Egypt. I've been meaning to talk about this for 2 weeks now, and I just really can't wrap my mind around it.
We postponed it last week because we had our guest Alex on. And he
specifically asked me not to speak about Egypt at all. I don't know why. I don't know what his thing is about Egypt. I don't know. I was like, what's the problem? And he was like, go fuck yourself about Egypt. I don't know. Turning really into like a weird Tony Soprano character.
Yeah, that sounds like a weird accent for him to have. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this episode, and we enjoy you listening to the episode. And yeah, stay tuned next week on Ethnically Ambiguous!
Sorry, what?
Bye.
Oh wait, are you gonna bite that ass?
I'd bite that ass.